So while folks are coming in, do exactly what you're doing, I think. So warm up a little, rest, lie down, sit, look around. But these first moments are sweet, actually. You get a more sustained transition from out there to in here. Just landing in your body, landing in practice space for the morning. All right, so we'll gently begin. Welcome this morning. I'm Sean Oakes. It's a pleasure to be here for Ashley. It's a pleasure to come up and be on the land and get out of the city a little bit. And we'll begin in any most comfortable posture, so sitting or lying down, any way that your body wants to be really at ease and use no effort for the first few moments. And then I'll invite you to just let yourself look around. So we're landing here. Let yourself see through the windows to the space outside, see the space of the room. And this is part of how the body, the nervous system, comes into itself. Right? As we come out of wandering thought, we come out of the stories and conversations that you may have already had this morning, whatever's going on in your life. There are these moments at the beginning of practice where we come into presence, we come into our senses, we come into the physical space in a very basic way. Some of that might be like unwinding some of the tensions in the body, how we squirm a little to get comfortable. We land in a posture that's not a formal meditation posture, yeah? But just a kind of arriving. And then see what it's like as you find yourself landing here. Often as the gaze moves around, body gets comfortable, the breath comes a little more fully. The vision can get a little clearer. As we come out of the habits of distraction and into the present moment. And then I often begin practice with a kind of inward check-in. And that check-in first is to notice my general energy. Am I sleepy this morning or a little buzzy or restless? Am I tired or alert? Just have a sense of your general energy. And this is important in the beginning of practice, because so much of what we do in yoga and meditation practice is we do specific things to adjust that energy. If we're a little sleepy, we might do things to energize and uplift our energy. If we're a little restless or buzzy, we may do things to settle our energy. And so try this as a first yoga. If you find yourself a little dull or foggy or sleepy, brighten your posture a little, whether it's lying down or sitting up. Bring a little more breath and alertness, uprightness of spine or length of the spine if you're lying down. Deepening the in-breath. And see how that shifts subtly, that kind of tired or foggy energy. You might also open your eyes a little wider and lift your gaze up, which can lift the energy. Or if you find yourself a little buzzy, if you find yourself awake but a little restless, or if there's anxiety, then relaxing, softening the spine, not worrying too much about a bright, upright posture, but letting yourself kind of settle. Emphasize the exhale like a little sigh. And let the gaze drop down. And all of these can be ways to, in a very simple way, kind of tone down. And part of what this shows us is that not only is each of our practices different, because we are different people in different bodies, different ages, different health conditions, different everything, but our practice is also different day to day. One day you may do a lot of brightening practice, another day a lot of settling practice. With energy, we're moving our energy toward balance. We're encouraging ourselves toward a mid-range where there's calm but alert. A second thing to check in with in the beginning of practice is what I call charge. This is generally your mood. In Buddhist language, we say vedana. Are things generally pleasant or generally unpleasant for you in this moment? Very often we get this as just a subtle coloring on our mood. I feel pretty good, I feel not so good. And again, this is part of basic mindfulness, to know it in an experiential or embodied way. Oh, this is unpleasant. Or, oh, this is pleasant. We're always cultivating this clear awareness, a kind, spacious awareness we call mindfulness. And so just noticing, oh, slightly unpleasant. And there's nothing to do about it immediately. Ideally, our practices bring more pleasure and energy. But our basic practice is acceptance. The body is like this, mind is like this, in this moment. You just bow to it, pleasant, unpleasant, it's fine. And the third and last internal check-in is the check-in toward the quality of focus in the mind. Is it relatively easy to bring your attention to the body and the breath and let it rest there? Or is the mind distracted, easily leaping away? This is the quality of focus, concentration, part of mindfulness. And so as we practice, the encouragement is to bring our attention as clearly and steadily as we can to the unfolding experience of the body here and now. The unfolding experience of energy and mood and feeling. And through this practice, finding a deeper steadiness of mind. A gentle but persistent focus that is the basis of meditation practice and inner cultivation. Notice that already doing the check-in with yourself, focus increases. Just giving the mind this task to feel myself, focus, stability increases. From here, we'll come into some movement. We'll come into our yoga practice and bring this curiosity about the states of the body mind, the states of energy, into practice. Tracking energy and states is the heart of Hatha Yoga practice. So from here to begin, I invite us to stand up. Just come to the front of your mat. You can clear it of props. We'll practice in a more or less gentle way, as is usual in this class, I hear. And if there's props that you usually use, like blocks and straps, they're in the back. Feel free to get them at any time. And like the instruction to sit or be in any comfortable posture, I'll also say that all of the postures that we'll take or the movement work are just suggestions toward opening energy or grounding energy. None of them are sacred. In other words, you know, universally one thing. They're all just templates to be varied. And the variation depends on your body and your energy this morning. So standing in a comfortable way, and you can just let the, almost like the legs just hang from the hips. And the feet can be close together or further apart. And what you can feel for is a sense of being balanced or rooted. Right? This word, mountain, tadasana, the standing posture, refers probably to the sense of a mountain as being immovable and rooted. So feel your feet. Feeling the feet, the sense of like, I'm in this place, I'm rooted in this place. Sometimes bending the knees a little helps that feeling. You might find a little bounce and feel how your weight is rooted here on your feet. And then so much of the yoga practice is to open energy and let it settle. Right? We come into these waves of expansion and contraction that are always happening. And in the movement practice, we amplify them. So opening your hands and lifting the heart. And then just soften the chest and let the hands sink. Let the knees bend a little bit. So a first expansion, inhaling and exhaling. And you can do a couple things with the breath here. You can link the breath to the movement, inhaling as the arms come up and exhaling as they come down. Or not. And really, I would say choose which one feels most easy and full. Sometimes the breath wants to be really slow and deep, but the movement isn't as slow. And then, of course, the speed of the movement is your own. So you might be slower or faster than others in the room. Just finding your own speed. Let's inhale and meet at the top and hold at the top, and then exhale while keeping the hands up. Just reach tall, as far up as you can, really lifting through the front line, through the sternum. And then bend the knees a little bit and exhale, turn the hands down and sink the knees. And we'll take a slightly bigger gesture, inhaling to a little arch and exhaling, bend the knees. And what this starts to give us is that the spine arches like a cow pose and then curls in like a little cat dropping the tailbone. Inhaling to arch and exhaling to curl. Do a couple more of those in your own breath rhythm. Full reach without strain. And once more, we'll meet at the top. And then exhaling, reach the sternum forward and dive forward. And the gentle version of this is to land with hands on knees, pausing there, lengthening the spine, or to fold further down, folding over bent knees. Let your head hang at the bottom, and you can shake it out a little bit, a little no. Some folks will fold deeply at the hips and work towards straightening the legs. Other folks bend the knees more and let the belly rest on the thighs, coming into a deeper ease through the hips. And here you can move the hips around, swing them side to side, little figure eights. In all of the postures I offer, I'll invite movement. There's nothing static in the body. Moving around. Here you can bend one knee and then the other, coming into a little stretch in the back of each leg, coming in and out of that stretch, moving. And then bending the knees deeply, sink the hips down as low as feels good, and we'll inhale and open, lifting the heart, keeping the knees bent in chair pose or Utkatasana, which literally means fierce. So you can be fierce in your pose as you like. You can open the hands while opening the chest, turn the palms up, and really open into the front of the ribs, breathing fully here through the front line of the body. And inhaling, coming all the way up. And exhaling, open into your mountain pose. Inhale to lift the heart. And again, diving down, hands to knees or all the way to the floor in your forward fold. Breathing fully here. If anything is the heart of the movement practice in yoga, it is deepening breath with sensation. Coming into the body through breath and sensation. Sinking down into the pose by either bending the knees deeply or by straightening one at a time. It's nice to let the head sink down. And then inhaling to lift the heart again into Utkatasana, a fierce pose. Sinking back like into an invisible chair. You can go down just a couple millimeters or a long way into the sensation. Open the hands again, peeling the shoulders back and the heart open. And breathing deeply. And once more inhaling to lift all the way up. And settle down. Pausing in mountain. Letting the arms hang. And tune into this first quality of energy in the body. Maybe the heart's going a little faster, a little warmth in the body. Noticing these. Noticing the sense of energy moving. A different kind of presence, a different sense of your weight into the feet. We'll come into a simple warrior sequence here. Brightening breath and movement again together. We'll start to inhale, lift up. Exhale, just hands to the hips, standing tall. We'll step the right foot back into a lunge, either a short lunge or further back, whatever feels good to you. Hips will be a little bit tilted. And just rooting into the legs, no strain, but a nice strength through the thighs. Feet, pressing the feet into the floor. And inhale, the hands to open. And then exhaling, lean forward just a little bit, letting the hands sweep down in front of the knees. And inhale to open. Same gesture we did standing. Exhaling to dive. And inhale to lift. And just find a speed of this movement that feels good to you. Three more. Brightening the breath through the ribs. Feet rooted to the ground. And then diving the hands down, use that momentum to step forward and inhale all the way up. And exhale, hands to the hips, step the left foot back, same thing. Inhale to lift and root the feet down. And exhale, swinging the hands forward. Inhaling to open. What we're searching for in these postures that are energizing is the sense of an opening energy through the body and heart, without strain, without trying to get somewhere or work the body. The body's working enough. Inhaling to lift. Exhale and step forward. Inhale all the way up. Exhaling tips. Right side again. Inhaling. Just flow through the sequence both sides. Hands flow down. Hands flow up. Brightening breath. And the purpose of brightening energy in yoga is to make that energy available for concentration, for loving kindness, for compassion, for clear seeing. So our training is just to settle more and more into the clear mind, stepping forward. Just follow your breath or your movements. And if you're new to some of the sequences I offer, and you find yourself thinking, oh, what's he doing now? Am I getting it right? Noticing any of that as the hindrance of doubt, and just letting it go. Like, it would be awesome if you did something different than me. And you just did something else, and you're like, I think this is where it's going, and one foot wanted to just go. And you could be like, I don't know, that's just... And really, like, honoring that, stepping forward, inhaling to lift. Exhale, sinking, bend the knees, Utkatasana. And a little deeper in Utka, sticking your butt back and just reaching way forward. A low version of this pose has you really like sitting down, like you're doing the limbo on roller skates. A much gentler version has you almost upright with just tiny bent knees. Hang out wherever feels right. Open the hands. If that feels good, turn the palms up and back or forward, finding the shoulders. Lifting all the way up. And hands to the sides. And again, just standing in mountain pose. If any tension is accumulated in the shoulders, give them a little roll. And just land. I use this basic gesture of what we call orientation through the visual field. This is taken from the nervous system work that I do. Let your eyes be open and see the space. So rather than trying to fix them to one spot, trying to concentrate is not how concentration happens. Relaxing and opening and settling is how concentration happens. So notice as you let your eyes move around, as you rest and the body settles from the activity, notice what it feels like to be here. So take the movement version of warrior into a static pose, stepping your right foot back. This time opening the hands, pause with the hands really open. Adjust your feet so you find a nice lunge that you can settle into, really spread the toes if that feels good. Front foot can face straight forward, which means the knee really facing straight forward, and the back leg strong. Again, we're going for not a specific shape, but the feeling of strength and clarity, lifting the heart. We can lift the hands together in some variations. You could have the hands wide. You could have them together. You can look up. You could look forward. One Hindu story that goes with the name of this pose, Virabhadrasana, is that the god Shiva was angry that he didn't get invited to a big sacrifice, a party, essentially. And he threw one of his dreadlocks on the ground, and it burst up as this fearsome warrior. And the warrior appeared through the ground at the dinner party with his sword upright, and then slew everybody. So here you are in the warrior pose. You might have a dinner party worth slaying in your life. Open the hands. You might have just come from one. Happy Thanksgiving. And of course, you know, being nonviolent types, we want to take it metaphorically. What wants to be slain in your life? What are the qualities, the forces that are not serving goodness, that you need energy to meet? Feel the strength in your legs and the brightness through the front line in this pose. We'll do one more variation, which is to reach the hands forward and just lean forward a little bit. And find a line from the back foot to the front hands, reaching out. And then we'll open the hands, step forward and lift up. And this gesture of grounding. Inhaling. And settling. Same thing, second side. Left foot back. Find the lunge that feels right for you this morning. Front foot forward, front knee forward. Sink into the legs so you feel your strength. And then opening the hands, opening the chest. It's another detail for this pose. We focus a lot on opening the front of the chest. Send some breath into the back of the chest, the back ribs. Almost like you could expand your back ribs with the breath. See what shifts in your breath as you do so. And then again, any of the variations with the hands lifted, wide, together, sword-like. Gaze can be down or medium or up. Some folks make it into a little back bend. Some folks focus on the straight spine. Find the breath here. And opening. And once again, the invitation through the metaphor of the pose. What in your life wants to be met with strong, fierce clarity right now? And then not just thinking about it, but just feel your strength in the pose as you hold it. It takes strength to hold the pose. Feel your strength and then hold your life in the context of that strength, whatever that means for you. Reach forward into the reaching variation, hands out. Really root the back foot, lifting the heart. And then releasing hands, stepping forward. And again, lifting. Grounding. And once more, lifting and grounding. Just pausing. Again, your standing meditation. Again, feeling vibration, heat, energy. Maybe a little ache in the muscles now that you've been using them. Take one more standing pose. We'll take a standing balance. And I'll offer a few variations of tree pose. This is often really a pleasure after we've engaged the legs in the strength postures. So, for balance, we know comes and goes day to day. You can have awesome balance one day and like, boop, the next day. So the aversion for the days when balance is not strong is to just turn one leg out and have your toes on the floor. And you could have the heel off, or you could touch the heel to your opposite foot. This is sort of a version of what we might have called, you know, casual society person pose, you know. Right, it's a voguing pose, right? Once upon a time. Those of you that ever vogued, you know you're out there. To go further into balance, right, the foot lifts off. And the foot can land on the round of your calf or up to the knee. Or you can use your hand to bring it up higher. So find a placement for the foot that feels right for this morning. And then opening the hands, there's your balance support. Part of the sense of balance in an interesting way is that it brings us into relationship with our midline and with gravity. And so you can bend the standing knee a little bit and almost have the sense like your weight is sinking down, like the upper body weighs nothing and all of your weight is below your knees. Like you're a weeble. I know they don't have them anymore. I want them for my toddler. Weebles that wobble but they don't fall down because all their sand is in the bottom and the upper half is empty. It's a metaphor for the empty mind. All of your weight is in your feet. But feel what that does as an awareness practice to sink your sense of your own weight down. Nice balance, folks. Which means, that includes the people who fall over. That's also nice balance. Inhaling if you want to lift the hands. Again, any variations that feel good. The main thing I'll suggest here now as we hold it is to let go of some of your effort. Not to try so hard for balance. Open the hands, step down. Feel the coming back into balance. Unwind the standing ankle a little bit. Seems to help. And the same thing on the other side. You could have the same variation in the feet on the other side or any other variation you like. And put the foot somewhere and open the hands. It always bears repeating that there's no perfect pose to get to, and that's, of course, that's true with balance. Balance is always actually a little oscillation, a little falling, a little righting. A good metaphor for a practice. There is no balance, actually. Right? There's just balancing. Maybe there's not even balancing. There's just a little impulse in one direction and then you float for a moment and then a little impulse in the other direction and you float. Arms wherever they like. Steadying the gaze at one spot helps balance. And coming out. Softening. Let's come to sitting. And come to sit with the soles of the feet together. So you're in a little butterfly kind of posture called bound angle, Baddha Konasana. And if you're on a soft enough bit of mat, we'll just flap the wings a little bit. One of the things about stretches that can be helpful in practice is that increasing our range of motion doesn't happen that often with tightly held stretches in stillness, but actually kind of stretching and releasing, like bouncing the ligaments, seems to help range of motion a little better. So if you want more open hip flexors, like for sitting cross-legged, actually doing this, bouncing, and you can put your hands into it if you want, will tend to help more in a certain way than kind of trying to stretch and hold. So this is just a little exercise for the hips. And then you can hold the feet or the shins or the knees and just round forward. And it's fine here to round the back, stretching into the thoracic spine, back of the ribs. Or you can lift the sternum forward, straightening the spine and drawing the belly down. As we come into seated poses, your attention can come a little more inward since you're not working with strength and balance as much. And this is a nice moment to deepen into a fuller intentional breath. So the breath isn't just responding to effort, but starts to become part of the cultivation practice, really breathing deeply into the whole body in the posture. In-breath can bring you into toward the posture, and the out-breath kind of settling deeper into relaxation in it. One of the classic breaths used in Hatha Yoga practice is called victorious breath, or Ujjayi pranayama. You can bring that in as, traditionally it says, resonate the breath between the throat and the heart center. So one way to do that is to tuck your chin back just slightly, like you're about to swallow, and breathe so that you can feel the breath in the throat and hear a little hiss of your own breath. Feels like the hiss comes from the throat, which is a little narrowed. And then just dropping the sense of the breath down into the chest, really into the upper chest for Ujjayi. You're expanding the upper ribs with the inhale and releasing them in the exhale. So you can play with that breath either in a strong or gentle way as you like. And then we'll inhale and open the hands all the way up. And come into a little counter pose, reaching the hands behind the body and arching the spine a little, just stretching through the belly and ribs. Turning the hands backward, bringing feet on the floor. We'll come into reverse table as a shoulder stretch, lifting the hips as high as you can, stretching into the fronts of the shoulders, and sitting down again. And then one leg long and the other leg in. Inhaling to lift. And exhale to reach out. Hold on to the long leg, either behind the knee or the ankle or the foot. And give yourself a stretch in that leg. A couple options for stretching the leg. One is to keep the leg straight and not worry about how far you reach, but focus on lifting the spine. So you might hold behind the knee, but then really lift the sternum in the stretch. Or bend the knee a little bit, bring the belly further down and reach out. If you work with a straight leg, you're basically stretching the back of the leg. If you bend the knee, you're working on length in the spine and softness through the low back. Some days I prefer one, some days I prefer the other. You can change it up. Releasing, lift the hands up on an inhale. Exhale, settle again, bring the feet to the floor and lift the hips. We'll counter pose for the forward fold. And sitting down to the other side. One foot reaches out, other foot in. Lifting up, you can roll right up onto your sit bones and then reach out long. And again, hold wherever it's easy. There can be so much grasping in yoga. Grasp the toes. That was a joke. But there is so much grasping, and the grasping is that, like, oh, if I were, you know, holding the toes and my belly was resting on my thighs all long and straight, deep hip fold, it would be better, right? My practice would be fuller. I'd be closer to enlightenment. There's this saying from the Zen tradition. One monk joking to another that if sitting made you a Buddha, all the chickens would be enlightened. It's true here too. Essentially with yoga postures, if having long ligaments made you enlightened, then what? Like all the gymnasts essentially would be liberated. But it doesn't work that way, right? Long ligaments means range of motion. And that might mean that we can move in a way that brightens our energy. But having a deeper stretch doesn't on its own mean anything in terms of wisdom. Yeah? It doesn't actually mean much in terms of health, for that matter. But how we relate to the body moving and sensation does. And that's our main practice here. And release the hand. Again, fly it upward. And come down. So, just bring feet in to the knees for a moment. One of the things that really has nothing to do with wisdom, but a lot to do with health, is how we can support the spine through the abdominals and the low back for posture, because we are a slump culture, right? You might spend much of your day like this, as I do, I'm sad to admit, and try to remember to bring myself upright much of the time. The early yoga system has very little to say about the core, probably because people weren't doing that. Like, they were walking around all the time and working. So so core work has been added by modern yogis because our bodies need it. So a little bit for the structural element that's useful in meditation of uprightness, but also throughout our postural world. We'll do a very tiny bit of core work. Go ahead and come down onto your back. And I'll offer a very gentle version of this, and then a couple variations. Just lying down, and hug your knees into center. And as you hug your knees in, you can feel the lower back lengthening on the floor. You could press the sacrum down. And then just flexing the feet, bringing your hands on top of your knees, and reaching the feet out just as far as it would look as if you were sitting in a straight-backed wooden chair, like an old-style chair, and you just fell over on your back, but you stayed in the posture. Like you're a good boy or girl, and you just stay sitting there, even though the chair fell over. Yeah, and this is it to start with. Like, this is the gentle version. And then to go on, reach the hands up past your head, and then cradle the back of the head. Just curl in a little bit. Feel as you curl in how the belly engages, low back presses down. And then just slow, gentle bicycles, reaching one foot way out and then in, and the other foot way out and in. You can stop anytime you want, or you can make it more intense by curling in further. Feeling how the belly can press down, support the whole spine. Do a couple more and then pause with the feet on the ground, rolling down, opening the hands. And when you come into the resting pose from these, really relax the belly as the main thing. And then feel breath rising and falling in the belly. We'll come into a second round, and you can either do the same thing again, or I'll offer a little more intense variation for those who want it. Take another couple moments resting. Really bringing embodied awareness or mindfulness to the belly. Breath rising and falling in the belly. And then once again, drawing your knees in. And you can bring them all the way in again as a stretch. And then sit in the fallen chair, hands on knees. That's just a way to bring your knees right over your hips. So knees over hips, and then hands open, clasp behind the head. And then either the gentle version again, slowly pedaling one leg and then the other. And the slightly more intense version is to speed it up just a little bit, and then you can add in a little twist. As the left knee comes in, the right elbow can come to it. As the right knee comes in, left elbow come to it. And just do a few of those. Do this as long as feels right to you, and come back again to the resting pose. The only thing that differentiates this from being at the gym is mindfulness, right? So how do you bring your attention to your whole being as you do this? Are you tracking emotion? Are you tracking sensation in a way that brightens concentration and kindness for the body, for its aging, for the sensations of existence? Like the story about the warrior pose, do you feel strong when you do this? Do you feel shame or embarrassment? Do you just struggle to do it so that it can be over? Right? Come to resting with the feet down. Any counter poses or restorative poses that feel good to you? Some folks might want to root the feet down and lift the hips in a gentle bridge pose. here, or bring the knees to one side or the other in a little twist. Take a moment doing whatever your body feels like it would like to do, whether that's a yoga pose or not, here on the ground. As in the standing mountain and the coming back to stillness, our movements here are both to settle the energy of the posture and to come again into awareness of how's energy moving, is it pleasant or unpleasant, is the mind focused and at ease. And we'll come together into a bridge pose next. So you can bring the feet pretty wide, the width of the hips are even a little wider, and they can be a little further away from or quite close to the hips, whatever feels good. And with palms down, pressing a little into the floor, this helps to root the shoulders back, and then pressing with the feet to lift the hips up. And a couple options here. You can clasp hands behind your back, press with the feet, and lift the sternum toward your chin. It's a classic version here. You could keep the hands wide and follow your breath, inhaling the hips up and exhaling it down. And do this pose in movement, where you inhale up and you exhale down. Yeah, some folks are stretching the hands behind the head, which can feel lovely in terms of lengthening the back ribs. Take a few breaths exploring the bridge. Stay up for a while, come down, come in and out to different variations that feel right to you. If you have a block, you can put the block under your sacrum. If you want a block and you don't have one, raise your hand and I'll bring you one. And folks working with the block can use the block on its lowest or its medium height. It's often nice. So flat support or a little higher under the sacrum. Folks who include in their practice going into deeper back bends, like up into inverted bow, can come into that, of course, here. And in general, at this point in our practice, we're starting to open into the fullness of the physical practice. And that's going to be really different for all of us. So I'll give some suggestions, but I'm going to start to leave a little more open space for you to find what feels nice. Folks coming out of bridge, resting, lying down. And I'll offer a couple options for going forward. One is a restorative twisting posture, where you could bring both knees to one side or bring one foot on top of the other leg and twist. You come into a twist on each side. There's several variations of that twist that you could take. Another option that a couple folks have taken is a gentle inversion. So from bridge, lifting one or both legs up, supporting underneath the sacrum for either a gentle shoulder stand or what's called Viparita Karani, the inverted action, hips held up on the hands. If you're twisting, do both sides. If you're doing the inversion, anything you want to do with your legs, they can reach up, they can reach back over your head, into plow, halasana, they can open wide. We'll spend a little bit here and then we'll come together in a pigeon direction. Mm-hmm. So for another minute or so, any of the variations you're doing are great, or anything else you want to do on your back. When you finish the inversion and the twists, you can roll to one side and come to sit up. And we'll set up for pigeon, a couple variations for the hips. So pigeon talks about any number of postures that open the outer hip flexors and the inner groins. And the gentlest version of this we also do from lying on the back. You would start the same way you would start in bridge, lifting one foot and cross it over the other foot. And across, I used to call, you know, cafe table, sitting there having your tea, pinky out. And you can bring the knee in. And you could do a couple things with your hands. You could reach through for the outside of the shin or underneath to the thigh, or hold the knee in the foot itself. It helps to keep this foot flexed for the knee. And you can draw it way far in, curling in, or just rest there with the foot down and press the knee forward a little bit. And all of those are great versions. And what you're going for is just when you feel the stretch or the engagement through the back of the hips, thighs, in a way that feels good to you. Some other places this can go are straightening the leg, holding the foot and reaching the leg out, that kind of thing. For folks who want to come into the forward folding versions of pigeon, you can start either from downward dog or just start from kneeling, bringing one foot forward, one knee forward, and then settling back. And again, here there's lots of variations. So some variations have you rolling off to the side and the hip down. That can torque the low back a little bit, but be really nice in the hips. Balancing in the low back is to stay straight, but it's a more of a stretch in the hips because you're lifted. You could put a block under the butt on this side. And you can either stay up on the hands or come down. Yeah? So explore your way into one of those variations. If you want a suggestion, raise a hand and I'll come over. And again, leaving it open in a way that this really becomes not put my body into this ancient shape, but what can this shape, the suggestion of this shape, offer this body this morning? How can I be in this shape in a way that is easeful, even if the sensation is strong? Even joyful, like, here I am in my body with good people on a glorious fall day in a beautiful room. What good fortune. So much of my life is like this. I could be like, I can complain about something, or I could actually look around and be like, what good fortune. Going deeper, and go ahead and switch sides whenever you're ready. We'll stay here for a little bit. So you might switch sides to the same variation you did on the first side, or your second side, surprise, surprise, might be a little different than your first side, because we're not symmetrical, because nothing in nature is perfectly symmetrical. So what do you find as you come to the second side? Different sensations, different intuitions as to what's the right detail to bring into the shape. Find your way in on this side. Very often at this point in practice, approaching an hour in, and we'll transition soon to sitting, we might not notice that our energy has become a little more balanced, our mind a little more focused, our mood a little brightened. But it's so often true. One of the biggest illusions with this is that when our overt discomfort or anxiety settles and we get a little calm, the body opens a little, the mind can so easily go, oh, now things are normal or ordinary, and kind of not notice. As in, if we're not noticing discomfort, we're not noticing anything. And that's such a deep habit. Go ahead and come out of the pigeon whenever you're ready. And come to any resting pose, sitting up or lying down. And just feel the results of the pose through your body, through your energy. And see if in the resting pose you can notice this shift toward a little bit of deeper ease. I almost guarantee you that it's true. That a bit of moving, if you haven't injured yourself, even if things are still hard, if the mind is distracted, if you're still upset about something in your life, the energy around it is different. What might it be like to notice that, to lean into that, to open your breath and mindful presence into that sense of a little bit more ease? Particularly, notice how it's a little easier to stay focused, to stay in tune with the body and breath, even if there's lots of thoughts. The tone is different. As we begin to come toward the stillness part of meditation, we begin to shift more and more from movement being what opens the whole body to breath and awareness being what opens the body. It just means we get a little subtler. Wherever you are now, deepen your breath. If it feels good to do, take a fuller in-breath and begin to fill the belly and the chest with breath. If you're lying down, it can feel good to bring the soles of the feet again to the floor, just to lengthen the low back on the floor and let the belly soften. If you're sitting up, it can feel good to support under the hips a little bit. We'll do another posture or two, but this is the transition toward stillness. Begin to deepen your breath, and again, you can use the Ujjayi breath resonating in the upper chest. And now the invitation is to bring the breath to the whole body, to bring the inhale down into the bowl of the hips and pelvis, relaxing through the genitals and the root of the body, through the butt, and then further to enliven the legs, not with musculature as we usually do. It's not so much about the strength of the legs, but bringing the breath all the way down through the columns of the legs into the feet. Can you feel the breath through the soles of your feet? And in the upper chest, as we expand the upper ribs around the heart center, the shoulders, bringing the breath out into the arms, and again, not as reach or strength or doing, but just as a column of energy. Can you feel the breath coming in and out of the skin of your forearms or through your palms? And then even higher up, filling out the whole body, the soft sense of the breath in the space of the head. Almost like a gentle breath, wind, presence can displace thought. Breathing through the field of the head as if the head was open, hollow, empty. Empty of obsession, empty of anxiety. Empty of unnecessary density. Take another few breaths here. This is the beginning of pranayama practice. A gentle but fuller breath through the whole body. And the steadying of the mind with the breath. This is the third step in the sequence of mindfulness of breathing from the early Buddhist texts. Breath in the whole body. And then we'll end our posture practice the way we began it, actually. I'll have you bring your knees in, roll to one side, come to sitting up, and actually come to standing, which is unusual. We usually follow the relaxation train all the way into the little nap we call shavasana. But today, I want to suggest that we don't need to end the physical practice that way. But come back to mountain pose. And a really soft mountain. Instead of rooting the feet, just allow the feet to soften and spread. Instead of pressing the legs down, just allow the legs to support you. And again, let your eyes be open and let them move around a little bit. See the ceiling, see through the windows, see the bodies in the room. And once again, notice the shift in your energy, in the brightness of your energy, in the pleasant unpleasantness, and in your focus. And we'll end with a gentle, energizing practice to bring us into meditation. Open your feet a little wider, maybe just wider than your mat. Bend the knees just a tiny bit. And for folks a practice that includes this, you can do this as deep as you want. You can come into full kind of horse stance if that's part of your practice. But just a gentle bend is enough. We'll inhale and open. Exhale and close, sinking down a tiny bit. And three of these. It's like we're taking the whole energy of the physical practice and kneading it through the body. Inhale, reach the hands forward. Make fists with the thumbs inside and draw the elbows back. And just hold the breath out at the bottom here for a moment. And then inhale to lift. Exhale through your mouth here. But slow. I'll do two more of those. And And then inhale up, come back to your mountain. And exhale down. And one more of those. So now in mountain pose, finishing the asana practice, and finishing it with a little fierce gesture, right? With another gesture of strength, feel how the energy of the whole practice, and then ending in this kind of strong upright, has a brightness in your body. And see if you just connect with that. See if it feels good to stand. Let go of any extra effort in the pose. Relax the knees, relax the shoulders and hands. And bring your attention to your midline, to the plumb line that you could imagine dropping down from the center of the sky through the crown, through all the energy centers, and right to the center of the earth. Like the earth is the weight on the bottom of a pendulum, and your body is a itty-bitty bead resting on the same string, resting on top of that weight. And above the head, that clear line all the way to the fixed point that doesn't exist. What is it to ride the earth in this way? To have a relationship to the earth in this way? Feel your tallness, the way the crown opens above and the feet stay rooted down. And between those two, the whole system lengthens. You brighten your breath and energy between earth and sky. And then memorize this feeling in the spine. The soft spine, supported by the pelvis and the legs, right? You're not tucking the pelvis or pushing it back or doing anything muscular. The body knows how to stand. The body also knows how to sit. And so take this uprightness through the upper body as the template. What we're searching for in the sitting posture is an effortless upper body, opening to the sky rather than struggling to maintain anything. Take another few moments here and we'll transition to sitting. So as you build your seat for seated meditation, see if you can build it in a way that allows the spine to remember this orientation. One of the main things that can support this uprightness is enough elevation under your butt. And it can help to bring your hips level with or higher than the knees. So for some folks, a chair is good for that. For other folks, two cushions under your butt rather than one. For others, kneeling. Notice if you have an idea that sitting meditation and yoga postures are very different forms of practice. And then I'll suggest that you begin in the sitting posture with the same kind of attention you would bring to a yoga posture, because it is one. Is there ease? Is there balanced effort? Is there focus in relation to the body and its posture? Do you like it? And take the first few moments in it to explore the new posture in the same way you would settling into a yoga posture. Some of that exploration might be, does the spine feel well supported to come into its length? Are there tensions remaining in the hips or low back or mid-back or shoulders that could be softened or supported by a different cushion or chair structure? If you always close your eyes immediately, notice just the effect of that. Notice if the mind wanders more or less, if it allows you to bring your attention deeper into intimacy with yourself, or if it brings you a little away from presence. And you can always sit with eyes either open or closed. As we come into sitting, into stillness, there's a suggestion in the early texts that one of the first things to notice as meditation deepens is pleasure. The suggestion is that being still and gathering the mind has a pleasure to it, a sweetness. So often we don't easily find this in sitting. Many of us struggle with the mind, with anxious thought, with emotion that feels out of control. We struggle with the dramas of our lives. But the instruction says, take the pleasure that arises when you come into stillness, the pleasure of doing less, the pleasure of focus. Take that pleasure and knead that pleasure through the whole body like water into a ball of dough. What would that mean? I think we do this in the physical posture practice beautifully. We send the breath to the legs, the arms, the pleasure of energy to the whole body. How would you do that here? Notice where your mind naturally wants to go and breathe more deeply with it to start. See if you can soak the body in the energy of breath and presence, and which helps to bring the mind here. I love starting meditation in stillness with a deepened breath. Eventually, we'll move toward a natural, unguided breath, but for many of us, a deepened breath, drawing in nourishment, drawing in fullness, actually settles the heart-mind more fully. Filling and emptying the body with breath. Really in an effortless way. The way when you relax, often a deeper breath comes by itself. And so relaxing through the face, shoulders, ribs, solar plexus, belly, pelvis, legs, into the earth. Relaxing the belly especially, receiving the breath through the diaphragm into the belly. You can think the words in and out, or the ancient word buddho, awake, with the in and out breath, bud on the in breath, dho on the out breath. The ancient mantra from the early Buddhist tradition, like a bell ringing in your heart, wake up, wake up. Or even more gently, awaken, awaken. Each breath, attention connects with the breath and sustains through that breath, breathing the pleasure of steadiness into the whole body. If you're working hard to maintain the posture, or you're trying to not think or concentrate, softening that effort, but leaning into the pleasure of stillness. In whatever way you like this, lean into that. We'll sit together in silence, delighting in the breath, delighting in the heart, delighting in stillness and presence. And if you get really lost, as we all do over and over, let the eyes open for a moment. Relax the effort. Don't try to come back, but take a breath. And let the breath bring mind and heart and body back together and begin again. for our last few minutes of sitting. If the mind has wandered, fill again the body with breath and attention, with kindness. If tensions have crept into the body, softening, relaxing, softening the belly, shoulders. And notice again as we finish a form of practice, notice the shift in your state. Notice your energy, is it bright or dull? Pleasant or unpleasant feeling? Is the mind a little more gathered? And of course, not worrying about the absolute versions of these. It's not about getting to a great concentration state or a perfect energy state. Like the practice of balancing, meditation invites us to make the conditions for a wholesome state. Gathered attention, brightened kindness, ease, but also to let go of attaining that or sustaining it. Everything is fluctuation. Everything is change. But noticing the ways that our practice brings that ease helps us to enter it more and more often, to deepen it. Noticing and appreciating any way that your state is more like what feels nourishing to you. Breathing into that. And then folks lying down can come to sitting, and we'll close the asana and meditation part of the day, singing together the ancient sound Om, which is used in both the Buddhist and yogic traditions. One of the ways that Om is understood, even in the earliest texts, is that the three letters A, U, and M can be thought of as standing for Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. This is in the Pali Canon. The Buddha co-opting the Om from the Vedic tradition. So Om, Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, the open ah, rising through the body, ooh, gathering energy, and resonating through the head and through the upper body, the Take a deep breath in together. Take our short adjustment break here to gather in semicircles near the front, and we'll talk a little bit together. We'll start again in 5 or so. All right, so welcome again. It's good to see everyone. I hear that one of the things you do at this moment is share names, and I'd love to hear who's here for a moment. Let's combine the sharing of names. I know there's a little avoiding the glare dance. You keep moving around. Please do. Because I was talking about kind of our state, like energetic state, or what shifts as we practice. Let's combine the names with a little sharing, really just like a sentence or two for time, but just to share a little bit of our experience. Say your name and say something that you notice either today or just in general in your yoga and meditation practice, where you can really sense how your state, your energetic state, your emotional state, your shifts in the course of formal practice, right? How does what you feel change through the physical or stillness practice? I'll start and then we'll just go around in a quick circle. So my name's Sean, and one of the things I notice is it feels like my energy, both physical energy and attention, begins in a kind of a dispersed state, and through the physical and the meditation practices, it seems to gather into a little more of a like a gathered clarity. Let's just go around this way. That's a shift for sure. Great. Yes, as many of us should. Rex, yeah.
My name is
Welcome. Please cry. Yeah. Yeah. Right on. Good. So, this is great. In Western Buddhism, there has come to be a couple different ways to think about meditation practice, partly because the systems that we have come up with that have become forms like insight meditation and others have been influenced by multiple streams of ancient practice. And in some ways, very different ideas about how practice unfolds. And the relationship of yoga as posture practice, breath practice, and meditation as an awareness or mindful practice, and the way that those have been separate communities, separate forces in the West is part of that. One of the main divisions in practice that we can start to identify that shows up subtly in how the meditation instructions or mindfulness instructions are different at different times from different teachers, is that we will hear an instruction to be aware of phenomena as they arise, like sensations or feelings, energies, pleasant and unpleasant, mind states, etc. To be aware of them without intervening at all, with a kind of neutral witness awareness. And sometimes this is called bare awareness or open awareness. And the heart of it is the position of the witness, this kind of observing without intervening quality. And this is a profound meditative state, contemplative state. And in some traditions, it's thought of as the highest of the yogas. That kind of observation without fixing onto an object, without trying to control our experience at all or make it into something, is considered both the most refined meditation, for instance, in some Tibetan traditions, and also the hardest. And it's not a beginner's practice in many of the systems. But in some traditions, like Zen, it became the entire thing. And so even as a beginner, you'll be given that instruction. And that happens here as well. In insight meditation, very often, the instruction we're given, like for the breath, right away is, don't modify the breath. just let it do whatever it's doing and just observe it without trying to change it. That's a great instruction, a beautiful instruction for cultivating equanimity and a spacious awareness that doesn't grasp. The trouble with that instruction is that it's hard, and that when we don't succeed at it, we very often simply reinforce deep habits that aren't necessarily useful. And so then the other wing of yogic practice that, and both of these show up in all the traditions, they show up in the yoga world, they show up in early Buddhism, they show up in later Buddhisms. The other wing of practice is doing things intentionally to change your state. Breathing more deeply, sitting up taller, right? These are not the instruction to just observe and be mindful without intervening. This is an instruction to intervene. And this instruction is exemplified by what we could call the seventh component of the Eightfold Path, which is the practice of effort, wise effort. The three final components of the path dealing with the meditative practice, effort, mindfulness, and concentration. Sorry, effort is sixth, mindfulness is seventh, concentration eighth. Effort, mindfulness, and concentration speak to the assembly of the heart-mind in focused, balanced, energized presence. And the practice of effort is described as cultivating wholesome states and preventing unwholesome states. And it's an active practice. Right? It says, if there's a wholesome state that hasn't arisen, invoke it. Like joy, one of the seven factors of enlightenment. If there's not joy present, find some. Right? But also, if there's not calm present, find some. So it really says, assess your experience and notice that if there are wholesome factors that are not present, cultivate them intentionally. Don't just observe in a neutral way. Likewise, if there are unwholesome factors present, to be blunt, get rid of them. And again, don't just observe them in a neutral way. So you could take anger as a manifestation of a self-protective impulse, but that can spill out into hatred or judgment of ourselves or others. This is traditionally an unwholesome quality. The instruction for bare mindfulness and the instruction of right effort would then be opposites, right? One instruction says just observe it and accept it. It's a natural quality. That's true. The other says find its roots, uproot them, end this quality in the psyche. And this difference in instructions can be confusing for beginners. It can actually be confusing for non-beginners in practice because you have to assess moment to moment what's the right practice. Is the right thing for you in this moment to work on accepting all phenomena that arise without preference? That's a deep training in equanimity. Or is the right practice for you to actually tune your instrument, right? To shape your experience and say, oh, look, like ill will or hatred, self-hatred or judgment of myself or others has arisen. Stop it. Not in a judgmental like way that would just add more self-hatred to the mix, right? Like, I hate myself for hating myself, right? So that's not useful. That's an endless regress. Oh, I hate myself for hating myself, for hating myself. But it says actually, and this can really come out of our practice of loving kindness, I notice the unwholesome state, and out of kindness for all concerned, myself, my partner who I might bark at, my kid, the earth that I impact and live on, the people I encounter, can I uproot this unwholesome quality from my being? And so one of the things that's powerful about the weave between the what I'll call the more active practices like taking yoga postures or guiding the breath, deepening the breath, is that these are practices that sit on the doing side of the doing non-doing spectrum. Right? They say, if you're a little sleepy, brighten up. If you're a little restless, calm down or concentrate. If the mind is dispersed, gather it, right? It also says if most of what you're noticing is unpleasantness, if there's mostly complaint in your system, notice the pleasant. As in, turn your attention away from the thing that's grabbing your heart, the drama in your life that you can't stop thinking about. But that really what your heart is saying over and over is, things are wrong, things are wrong, things are wrong. It has to be fixed, it has to be fixed. And that's a habit that comes from the nervous system trying to protect itself, but it's not actually protecting you, right? It's causing greater distress. And it's an unwholesome state. Anxiety is an unwholesome state. And so using the active practices, we say, turn your attention away from that toward a wholesome state. So when I do physical practice and then entering into the stillness practice now, I very often begin with this thing that might be strange to some of you, which is to look around. This is a practice that comes from the trauma work that's growing in the Buddhist world right now. And what it is basically is a cheap trick for your nervous system. Right? You're not really looking around. What you're doing is you're inviting your animal body to recognize that it's safe here. And so what it does is it takes me out of distraction, it brings me into the physical space through my senses, through the visual sense. And as a nice byproduct, the part of myself that might feel under threat is also logging where the doors are and the windows and who's here and if you're glaring at me and I should be afraid. Right? All of the subtle cues that we get that you're an animal, right? Like, you're constantly assessing the environment, mostly unconsciously, for the clues of whether you're safe or not. And so one of the deepest things we can do to deepen in wholesome states is to give our bodies, our animal bodies, our nervous systems, the information they need to feel safe. Feeling safe is pleasurable. Pleasure gives rise to concentration and mindfulness and kindness and all of the other wholesome states. And without the feeling of safety, we can't land in meditation. Right? You can't close your eyes and go inward if you're worrying about being hurt by the outside. And that's the gross level version of it. But of course, this is true on so many subtle levels. If I'm trying to settle the heart into deep intimacy with the present moment, but my mind keeps going, you know, call Aunt Marge, call Aunt Marge. Remember to call. That was a terrible conversation. You must fix it. You must do something. Oh my God, that thing he said, it's so bad. Wait, my emails. Like, if the mind is doing that, there's no way to settle. In the observe without doing anything model, the teaching is that if we just notice that and come back to the present, that action alone will let it subside. And I think that it can for some people. That coming back to the present can be a form of reminding the body, mind, that I'm safe here and that the obsessive thought is not actually killing me in this moment. But for a lot of us, what that does is it kind of just doesn't deal with it in a certain way. And I say this again coming from the information about the nervous system and trauma. I want to suggest that the unwholesome states that include the wandering mind, distraction in meditation, anxiety, obsessive thought, difficult or unpleasant emotion, harmful emotion, so like ill will, harmful, grief, not harmful, even though it may be unpleasant. So really knowing what's wholesome and what's unwholesome in terms of feeling. But the unwholesome feelings and the states, I want to propose that these are not random bubblings up of consciousness just to be observed in a neutral way. I want to propose that these are the nervous system saying that it doesn't feel safe. And that in some way, anxious thought is the animal being going, I'm afraid of the future, I'm afraid of the future, I'm afraid of the future. Which means that it's not a random arising, it's actually a sign that there is a dis-ease, a non-resting in the body right now. And because of that, I think the active practices for many people can be more effective quicker than neutral observation. The baseline of our whole practice is open observation, but getting to that, being able to do that successfully, requires a wholesome state. So I teach now that the open awareness practices, the wide open non-judgmental practices, are actually a step in practice or a phase in practice that comes after a fair amount of stabilization. Only when I can rest at ease in contact with some amount of pleasure and the feeling of safety can I then take my hands off the wheel. Because I know that taking my hands off the wheel and allowing my system to fluctuate and just observe, I'm not going to just land in the ditch of obsessive negativity. Until I'm ready for it, that practice can be destabilizing. When I'm ready for it, it's the most liberating thing. And it's actually the thing that has to happen eventually for liberation to unfold. Right? You can't just control your experience for the rest of your life. I know you're trying. Perhaps it will fail. As we learn to tune our practice, what we learn is that when there's unwholesome states and energetic challenge, it can be very helpful, once we notice that they're there, to shape our experience in the direction of positive affect or pleasantness, brightening of energy, but essentially balancing of energy, and then deeper focus. Once I can sustain presence with the pleasant and the easeful, then there's a slope toward letting go of effort more and more and more and more and more until there's a resting. And that resting ultimately includes everything. It means I can fluctuate through pleasant and painful, through gain and loss, all of the comings and goings that are part of impermanence. So then the yoga practice starts with, take this shape, breathe this way, deepen the breath, hold the breath, reach out really long. And doing all of that, it's like I focus and I gather my energies and I align them. But that can't be the end of practice. Right? Otherwise, I'm essentially learning military drills. And an injury and age and the fluctuating of the body is eventually going to disrupt that clarity anyway. But I start there, and then from that clarity, then there's this feeling. This is why I really encourage noticing how your state shifts in practice. I start a little bit dispersed. I gather my energy, and then it's gathered. And I think from that place of a somewhat gathered energy and a groundedness, that's where the traditional instructions often start. Right? When the Buddha tells people to meditate, you know, in the early texts, the instructions are really, very simple, perhaps disheartening. You know, they say things like this. Find an empty spot, sit down, cross your legs, assemble mindfulness, direct it to the breath, stabilize the attention with the breath, and then dissolve pleasure into the whole body. And I'm like, okay, that's it? What about the 20 years I spent like putting together an ego structure and learning how to not hate myself and dealing with, you know, obsessive distraction? None of that is in the texts, because they assume you've already got that. And so how do we get that? Right? We train in stability and actually coming out of the trance of distress. We do this intentionally, noticing wholesome states and breathing into them, letting them expand. Get the body more comfortable. Get the mind more comfortable. And if the body is injured in a way that comfort is never available, find the best comfort you can. Right? The way you said, too much sitting doesn't really work, walk in nature. I'm like, yeah, do that. And don't think that is a prelude to sitting in meditation, as if sitting meditation is better, right? It's more like, no, that's what you need to do to find the wholesome state. Once you have a wholesome state, then deepen from there in whatever way. The whole practice suggests wholesome states give rise to stability. Stability gives rise to clear seeing, and clear seeing gives rise to liberation. And so we have to get on that path in whatever way is possible. So as you practice, then, just the encouragement to be curious about, as your practice unfolds, when is it appropriate to notice your state and actually adjust it toward a more wholesome state? And when is it appropriate to notice it and let go? And I'll say just sort of one more thing about that assessment, and then here's some questions. When I notice my state and it's unpleasant, and I have the sense that taking my hands off the wheel and just observing it is going to lead to essentially the unpleasantness continuing and maybe even worsening or spinning or complexifying, that's a moment to say, put my hands back on the wheel. If I have the sense that taking my hands off the wheel and just observing in a neutral way, the pleasant unpleasant is good, is in its natural flow, and it's like, yeah, it's a little unpleasant right now, it's going to turn around. In other words, I'm not too messed up about it, or I don't like, that's the wrong term, messed up. I'm not out of balance in relation to it. Then, rest at ease, because pleasant and unpleasant fluctuates as part of existence, right? First Noble Truth. So, the sense in assessing whether it's right to be in an open witness or a guiding my state kind of practice is really whether there's enough basic balance and ease in my system to allow more. The less balance and ease or the more chaotic my system, the more deeply habituated the attention or focus on danger is, the more I'll need to contain and guide my system for a while. I think this is partly why open awareness meditation, the heart of, say, Soto Zen, has become kind of yay popular in the States. But standing in rows at attention and putting yourself through military drill yoga has become yay popular, like tremendously popular, because a huge amount of us, I think, need that structure and containment for a very long time at first. And mostly because this is Spirit Rock and I can say this, I'll suggest that that's good up to a point, but at a certain point it has to be let go of and come into a more open space. And so then, as your practice matures, it's going to be up to you, really, to play with the spectrum between ordered and constraining practice and then wide open, fluctuating, let itself do itself kind of practice. And that'll be true both in asana and in the stillness meditation practices. Any thoughts or questions here about this stuff? Yeah. Yeah. What I hear, and I think it's a really good question, is it's a little bit like, here's this structured practice that changes my state in a certain way. It brightens my energy, whatever. How do I even know whether that's the right thing to do? I might need to do a little, you're using the RAIN model. This is a model for a kind of clear often useful in like emotional settings, mindfulness, recognize what's happening, accept it, meaning don't be in denial, don't resist it, investigate it, get curious, feel it, be intimate with it. And then the N is non-identification, like see if you can observe it in a clear way without getting too tangled up in its meaning. And this is a beautiful model. This is a modern model for mindfulness that's tremendously useful. And part of what I hear you suggesting is it might be that you use that practice a little bit. And I'll suggest that practice just becomes habituated and it's always present in you through your whole life. Like you always are aware of what's happening and you're always accepting. Doesn't mean I'm not going to change it, but it means I accept that it's here now. Like, oh, look, I'm pissed, right? Acceptance means saying to myself, oh, look, I'm pissed, rather than being like, why that whoever, president, you know, whatever. I wasn't going to go there. You know, rather than blaming it on someone else, acceptance says, this is my state right now. I'm pissed. Investigation means like, what's really going on? Non-identification means like, oh, this is a product of conditions. I have to do that all the time. And so then that, especially the recognition and investigation pieces, are part of assessing what's the right practice for you today. So rather than having the habit, every morning at 9 I go to vinyasa class, or every morning at 6 I sit in meditation, those are fine if you need time, discipline, structure in order to order your life. That's good. But I'll suggest that a next step as mature practitioners, even beginning mature practitioners, is to say, oh, look, it's 5:45. Is sitting in meditation the right thing for me this morning? Or would going for a walk be the right thing? Or staying in bed? Right? What would give me this? What would condition the state that's going to be most useful for me? Clarity, brightness. Very often, meditation is wonderful for clarity and brightness, but not always. Likewise, is it the right thing to go to my vigorous vinyasa class today? And you know, maybe going there out of habit, whether I want to or not, is a good practice for discipline. But I think a deeper step is to say, is that actually going to cultivate the state that's right for me today? So I have a little bit of rain, and I do some cultivating, and I want to keep that awareness on, active, all the way through the practice. So like I've been halfway through a strong practice before and been like, oh, you know, that's enough strong practice for me. And I'm now actually shifting into a recognition that going more gently is right for me. And I'll go from like breathing hard and reaching out to the very tips of my cells to like softening everything and becoming like the floppy yogi in class. And then, and I give you full permission to do this, whether your teacher wants you to or not, I'll just not do things. Like I've just like, phew, like taken an early landing in class, and I start to do sitting poses, and you might be in the back if that's your thing, or check in with your teacher, of course. Don't be socially insensitive, but be willing to follow your thread and be like, oh, my system is settling down, and then really knowing that that's right. Something like that. Yeah. Yeah. Other thoughts? Yeah. Absolutely.
Is that kind of where you're going?
It's totally where I'm going.
I'm trying to envision how do you create your mindscape.
Yeah. Well, and here I'll make a distinction then. The garden metaphor is beautiful, right? So you're tending your garden. Of course, you're going to pull up the weeds and water the tomatoes, or you know, whatever your preference is. There's a beautiful definition of weeds from the permaculture world, which says that a weed is just any plant you didn't choose, right? That you didn't prefer there. One person's weed is another person's, you know, rarity. But I'll say that, like, growing a garden is one phase of spiritual practice, right? There's another phase that's called wilderness. So, like, in my garden, I want certain plants and not others. But out in the woods, I'm not going to go and try to pull up all the poison oak and make the woods comfortable for me. That's an illusion, that I could somehow change the whole external world to be, like, cozy. And so I think the open awareness practice, the open witnessing practice, the hands off the wheel practice is actually a very deep practice. That's why it's the most advanced, of not having a perfect garden, but becoming wild again. The trouble with becoming wild is that you have to actually be okay with wasps and, you know, other gnarly entities in your garden, poison oak, you know. And I think you find this in some really wise, you know, old people who are kind of over the whole game. They're over sexual attraction. They're over making money. They're over pleasing anybody. They're kind of just like themselves. They've become wild again. And there's poison oak and there's weeds. And it's just like, yep. You know, what did you expect out of this human life? And that's a different layer of wisdom. And I think it's developmentally appropriate. It's age appropriate in different ways. It's socially appropriate in different contexts to do that. I think for many of us, we might think that we're ready for that when actually what we're doing is we're just indulging old habits. And pretty much every practitioner I know would do better to focus on cultivating the garden than rewilding. And over time, start to, in a sense, learn how to garden in a wilder way. How to make space for the unwanted plants without thinking that you could possibly uproot them all and have a pristine, you know, Garden of Versailles kind of sculpted inner life. Yeah, so we have to do a bit of both. Cultivate the good, diminish the harmful, and at the same time, know that this is a wild ecosystem that can't actually be tamed by any effort, you know, and that even the Buddha, the liberated ones, are exemplars of what happens when you balance cultivation and letting go, and what could be the result of that. Any other thoughts, and then we'll close for the day. One more, please. Yeah. You could do that. I would call that an emergency method. I would call that an emergency break, you know.
What would you suggest doing other than observing if you're in it?
Yeah. Totally. What putting your hands back on the wheel might look like in a moment like that is gathering my attention and consciously assessing my immediate safety. So like, here we are disagreeing, we are not, but here I am disagreeing with the invisible, difficult person. And first, I'm going to remove myself slightly, you know, and I'm going to be like, okay, this is happening. That's recognition and acceptance. And then the active part of that is going to be, okay, what can I do in this moment to both end the discord and regain space? In other words, do I have to keep arguing? Almost never, unless I'm in immediate danger. So then my practice is going to be like, okay, I see myself trying to win the argument, stop. And I'm just going to be like, thanks for talking. I'm not going to go on. See you tomorrow. And I'm leaving. And just like step back, if I can. That's not always possible. But I'm going to take an active step to restore safety and equilibrium and end the trigger that's going to continue the discord. And then once I'm not engaged in essentially self-defense, then my practice is going to be, again, not just to accept, because often that just means I'm going to run through the story in my mind, re-amplifying it. I'm actually going to concentrate, and I'm going to bring my attention into the present, into the environment, and into something that feels more at ease. I'm going to walk, perhaps. I'm going to see what's around me. I'm going to feel the heat and vibration in my body, and I'm going to really intentionally allow the body to express, like just to feel, while keeping my attention rooted in the present and out of story. And so hands on the wheel mostly means directed attention, right? Consciously give my attention to something rather than letting it be wide open, which is going to usually mean spinning thought. It's very hard to be mindful of spinning thought. So get out of it is the hands on the wheel instruction. So attention to my body, but also attention into the space. Get out of the immediate trigger, and the body's going to chill out. Right? As soon as I'm not triggering it anymore, the nervous system is going to settle. And as it settles, the investigation and non-identification pieces can come in. Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for asking. All right. So, thank you for being here. It's really a pleasure to come up and teach for Ashley this morning. She's well. She'll be back next week. And I'm down in Oakland and Berkeley. You can find me down there. I'm teaching a retreat in January, the 3rd to the 10th, down in the Santa Cruz Redwoods, integrating yoga and meditation practice. And I have a Tuesday night sitting group at Namaste Yoga in West Berkeley. You're all welcome to, of course, if the East Bay is part of your circuit. And I'll just wish everyone well this morning and blessings in your practice. Oh, yeah.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.